grateful for your cooperation. And you stored the data safely?
Yes, Mr. Capaldi. My responses are stored. There was a silence, while the mother continued to stare at me from her chair, and Mr. Capaldi from beside his tripod light. I realized they were waiting for me to say something further. So I continued. It's a pity Josie and the father have left. Mr. Capaldi's work on the portrait may be temporarily impeded.
It's okay, he said. Not a serious setback.
I need to hear, Clara, what you think about what you saw. I apologize for examining the portrait without permission. But in the circumstances, I felt it best to do so. Okay, the mother said, and again I saw she was fearful rather than angry. Now tell us what you thought, or rather, tell us what you think you saw up there. I'd suspected for some time that Mr. Capaldi's portrait wasn't a picture or a sculpture, but an AF. I went in to confirm my speculation. Mr. Capaldi has done an accurate job of catching Josie's outward appearance, though perhaps the hips should be a little narrower.
Thank you, Mr. Capaldi said. I'll bear that in mind. It's still a work in progress.
The mother suddenly lowered her face into her hands, letting her hair hang over them. Mr. Capaldi turned to her with an expression of concern, but didn't move from his spot. The mother wasn't crying, though. And she said through her hands, her voice muffled, "Maybe Paul's right. Maybe this whole thing's been a mistake."
Chrissy, you mustn't lose faith.
She brought her head back up and her eyes were now angry. It's not a matter of faith, Henry. Why are you so fucking sure I'll be able to accept that AF up there, however well you do her? It didn't work with Sal. Why will it work with Josie?
What we did with Sal is no comparison. We've been through this, Chrissy. What we made with Sal was a doll. A bereavement doll, nothing more. We've come a long, long way since then. What you have to understand is this. The new Josie won't be an imitation. She really will be Josie. A continuation of Josie.
You want me to believe that? Do you believe that?
I do believe it. With everything I'm worth, I believe it. I'm glad Clara went in there and looked. We need her on board now. We've needed that for a long time, because it's Clara who'll make the difference. Make it very, very different this time round. You have to keep faith, Chrissy. You can't weaken now.
But will I believe in it when the day comes? Will I really? Excuse me, I said. I'd like to say there's a chance you'll never need the new Josie. The present one may become healthy. I believe there's a good chance of this. I'll need, of course, the opportunity, the chance to make it so. But since you're so distressed, I'd like to say this now. If ever there comes such a sad day, and Josie is obliged to pass away, I'll do everything in my power. Mr. Capaldi is correct. It won't be like the last time with Sal, because this time you'll have me to help. I now understand why you've asked me, at every step, to observe and learn Josie. I hope the very sad day will never come, but if it does, then I'll use everything I've learned to train the new Josie up there to be as much like the former one as possible.
Clara, the mother said in a firmer voice, and suddenly she'd become partitioned into many boxes, far more than at the friend's apartment when the father had first come in. In several of the boxes, her eyes were narrow, while in others, they were wide open and large. In one box, there was room only for a single staring eyeball. I could see parts of Mr. Capaldi at the edges of some boxes, so I was aware that he'd raised his hand into the air in a vague gesture.
Clara, the mother was saying, you've made your deductions well, and I'm grateful for what you've just said. But there's something you need to hear.
No, Chrissy, not yet.
Why not? Why the hell not? You said yourself we need Clara on board, that she's the one who'll make the difference. There was a moment of silence. Then Mr. Capaldi said,
Okay, if that's how you want it, tell her.
Clara, the mother said, we came here today, the main reason. It wasn't so Josie could sit more. We came here because of you. I understand, I said. I understood about the survey. It was to test how well I've come to know Josie. How well I understand how she makes her decisions and why she has her feelings. I think the results will show I'm well able to train the Josie upstairs. But I say again, it's wrong to give up hope.
You still don't quite understand, Mr. Capaldi said.
Although he was standing there before me, his voice seemed to come from the edges of my vision, because all I could see still were the mother's eyes.
Let me explain to her, Chrissy. It'll be easier coming from me. Clara, we're not asking you to train the new Josie. We're asking you to become her. That Josie you saw up there, as you noticed, is empty. If the day comes, I hope it doesn't, but if it does, we want you to inhabit that Josie up there with everything you've learned.
You wish me to inhabit her?
Chrissy chose you carefully with that in mind. She believed you to be the one best equipped to learn Josie. Not just superficially, but deeply, entirely. Learn her till there's no difference between the first Josie and the second.
Henry's telling you this now, the mother said, and suddenly she was no longer partitioned, like it was carefully planned. But it was never like that. I didn't even know if I believed any of this would work. Maybe once I believed it could, but seeing that portrait up there, I don't know anymore.
So you see what's being asked of you, Clara, Mr. Capaldi said. You're not being required simply to mimic Josie's outward behavior. You're being asked to continue her for Chrissy and for everyone who loves Josie.
But is that going to be possible? The mother said. Could she really continue Josie for me?
Yes, she can, Mr. Capaldi said.
And now Clara's completed the survey up there, I'll be able to give you scientific proof of it.
Proof she's already well on her way to accessing quite comprehensively all of Josie's impulses and desires. The trouble is, Chrissy, you're like me. We're both of us sentimental. We can't help it. Our generation still carry the old feelings. A part of us refuses to let go. The part that wants to keep believing there's something unreachable inside each of us. Something that's unique and won't transfer. But there's nothing like that. We know that now. You know that. For people our age, it's a hard one to let go. We have to let it go, Chrissy. There's nothing there. Nothing inside Josie that's beyond the Claras of this world to continue. The second Josie won't be a copy. She'll be the exact same, and you'll have every right to love her just as you love Josie now. It's not faith you need, only rationality. I had to do it. It was tough, but now it works for me just fine. And it will for you.
The mother stood up and began walking across the room. You may be right, Henry, but I'm too tired to think anymore, and I need to talk to Clara, talk with her alone. I'm sorry things got messy here. She went to where she'd left her bag hanging from one of the entrance hooks.
I'm really glad Clara knows, Mr. Capaldi said. In fact, I'm relieved.
He was following behind the mother, as if reluctant to be left alone.
Clara, the data may possibly highlight where you still need to put in a little more effort, but I'm glad we can speak more openly.
Come on, Clara, let's go.
So, Chrissy, we're still okay about all this?
We're fine. but I need a break from it now. She touched Mr. Capaldi's shoulder. Then we left through the main entrance, which he hurried to open for us. He followed us to the elevator and gave a cheerful wave before the doors closed. On the descent, the mother took her oblong from her bag and stared at it. She put it away again as the elevator doors opened, and we walked out across the cracked concrete, where the sun was making his evening patterns through the wire fences. I thought there might be a chance Josie and the father would be waiting there for us, but there was nobody. Only a tree's shadow falling across the mother's car, and the sounds of the city nearby. "Clara, honey, get in the front." But when we were seated side by side, looking through the windshield at the anti-parking sign, the mother didn't start the car. I looked at Mr. Capaldi's building, the sun's patterns on its wall and its fire escapes, and I thought it curious the building could be so dirty on the outside. The mother was again looking at her oblong. "They've gone to some burger place. Josie says she's fine, and that he's fine, too. I hope they're enjoying themselves. I've things to say to you, but let's get out of this place." When we drove out of the yard into the neighborhood, we had to stop for a lady on a basket bicycle crossing our path. We stopped again a few minutes later, under a long-arm traffic signal, even though there were no other cars in sight. Soon after the signal changed, we passed a large brown building set back from the sidewalk, with no windows at all, but with a large central chimney. Then we moved through an underbridge area full of shadows, puddles, and jump skaters. We emerged out in the sun's patterns, beside a building with a hiring now sign, and soon we were among pedestrians, and the sidewalk had small trees. Eventually the mother slowed, then stopped beside a sign saying, "We grind our own beef." The other cars had to pass noisily around us, but there was no anti-parking sign. Through the windshield, we could see another underbridge area in front of us, and the cars that passed us were forming a line to enter it. "This is the place. They're inside there." Then she said, "Paul does have a point. They need to be by themselves sometimes. Just them. They need that. We shouldn't always be with them. You see that, Clara?" "Of course." "She misses her father. That's natural. So let's just sit out here for a while." Up ahead, the signal color changed, and we watched the cars move into the darkness beneath the bridge. "This must all be a shock for you," she said. "You must have questions." "I think I understand." "Oh? You understand? You understand what I'm asking of you?" "And it is me asking. Not Capaldi and not Paul. In the end, it's me. That's who it comes down to. I'm asking you to make this work. Because if it happens, if it comes again, there's going to be no other way for me to survive. I came through it with Sal, but I can't do it again. So I'm asking you, Clara, do your best for me. They told me in the store you were remarkable. I've watched you enough to know that's maybe true. If you set your mind to it, then who knows? It might work, and I'll be able to love you." We didn't look at each other, but kept gazing out through the windshield. Beside me, on my side, an apron man had emerged from the Grind Our Own Beef building and was sweeping the sidewalk. "I don't blame Paul. He's entitled to his feelings. After Sal, he said we shouldn't risk it." "So what if Josie doesn't get lifted? Plenty of kids aren't. But I could never have that for Josie. I wanted the best for her. I wanted her to have a good life. You understand, Clara? I called it. And now Josie's sick because of what I decided. You see how it feels for me?" "Yes. I'm sorry." "Feeling sorry is not what I'm asking of you. I'm asking you to do what's within your power. and think what it'll mean for you. You'll be loved like nothing else in this world. Maybe one day I'll take up with another man, who knows? But I promise you, I'll never love him the way I'll love you. You'll be Josie, and I'll always love you over everything else. So do it for me. I'm asking you to do it for me. Continue Josie for me. Come on, say something. I did wonder, if I were to continue Josie, if I were to inhabit the new Josie, then what would happen to all this? I raised my arms in the air, and for the first time the mother looked at me. She glanced at my face, then down at my legs. Then she looked away and said, "What does it matter? That's just fabric. Look, there's something else you might consider. Maybe it doesn't mean so much to you, me loving you. But here's something else. That boy, Rick. I can see he's something to you. Don't speak, let me speak. What I'm saying is that Rick worships Josie. Always has done. If you continue Josie, you'll have not just me, but him. What will it matter that he's not lifted? We'll find a way to live together, away from everything. We'll stay out there, just ourselves, away from all of this. You, me, Rick, his mother if she wants. It could work. But you have to pull it off. You have to learn Josie in her entirety. You hear me, honey? Until today, I said. Until just now, I believed it was my duty to save Josie, to make her well. But perhaps this is a better way. The mother turned in her seat slowly, reached out her arms and started to hug me. There was car equipment separating us, which made it hard for her to embrace me fully. But her eyes were closed in just the way they were when she and Josie rocked gently during a long embrace. And I felt her kindness sweeping through me. The drivers wishing to enter the underbridge area were annoyed at having to pass around the mother's car. Many gave me unfriendly stares as they went past, even though they could see I was a passenger and not responsible. My concern, however, wasn't the passing cars or their unfriendly drivers, but what was going on at that moment inside the Grind Our Own Beef. Had my mind not been momentarily filled by the mother's words and her embrace, I might have been able to dissuade her from going inside. But no sooner had the embrace finished, and despite her remarks about Josie and the father needing time to themselves, she'd suddenly vanished from my side, slamming the car door behind her. As the minutes went by, I recalled the tense moments in Mr. Capaldi's building, and wondered if, despite the discourtesy, my own arrival inside the Grind Our Own Beef might be required in order to divert proceedings from scenes of similar upset for Josie. But before I could decide, the father appeared on the sidewalk on the other side of my window. He pointed the key device at the car, and when nothing happened, examined it more closely, then pressed again. This time there were release noises around me. The mother must have locked me in. And walking around to the traffic side, he quickly entered the car. He settled himself in the driving seat, but hardly glanced my way, staring instead towards the underbridge area. Then he placed a hand on the steering wheel and began drumming his fingers on it.
"Amazing how she still has this vehicle," he said. "I helped her choose it. For a while she was keen on a German car, but I told her this one would be more dependable. Well, I wasn't wrong. At least, it's outlasted me."
"Since Mr. Paul is an expert engineer," I said, "he must be very good at advising when choosing cars."
"Not really. Car engines were never my field."
He went on touching the steering wheel, now with some sadness. "Are Josie and the mother about to come out too?" I asked.
What? Oh, no. No, they're not. I don't think they'll come out anytime soon.
Then, he said.
In fact, Chrissy suggested I drive off somewhere. She wants me far away while she talks more with Josie.
He seemed less angry than in Mr. Capaldi's building. Indeed, he was now almost dreamy.
To be honest, I wasn't unhappy when Chrissy came in. You'd think I wouldn't be pleased, her interrupting like that. But the truth is, Josie and I weren't exactly having a lighthearted conversation. In fact, I was in a tight spot. Look.
At last, he looked at me.
I'm sorry if I've behaved badly towards you. I have a feeling I may have been impolite.
Please don't worry. I now understand very well why Mr. Paul may have been reluctant to greet me warmly.
I've never been good at, well, relating to your kind. You have to excuse me. No, I didn't mind Chrissy breaking in on us, because Josie was in the middle of asking some tough questions, and I'd no idea, no idea at all how to answer her. No fool that, Josie.
He looked out again to the underbridge area and went on drumming his fingers on the steering wheel.
After that visit, I wanted us to have a relaxing time, a coffee, something to eat. But then she asks me, since Capaldi is trying to help us, as I've been claiming, why do I hate him so much?
How did Mr. Paul reply?
I've always been useless at lying to her, so I guess I was, you know, prevaricating. And I knew she could see right through me. That was when Chrissy came in.
Does Josie suspect about this plan? The one in case she has to pass away?
I don't know. Maybe she suspects it, but doesn't dare look at it. But she's no fool. All these tough questions. Why was I so against someone doing her portrait? Well, let Chrissy have a go at answering.
Suddenly, he placed the key device into the ignition slot.
We've been instructed to get lost for a while. Until, to be precise, he looked at his watch. 5:45. Then we're to rendezvous at the sushi place. All of us, apparently. Josie, Chrissy, the neighbors, too. So unless you want to sit in a parked car for an hour, I suggest we drive around.
He started the engine, but the traffic line had become so extended we couldn't yet move. I put on the safety belt and waited. Then the lights changed up ahead, and the car lurched forward. Shadow and light patterns moved all around us. Then we came out from the underbridge area into an avenue of tall brown buildings. We drove past a large creature with numerous limbs and eyes. Then even as I watched, a crack appeared down its center. As it divided itself, I realized it had been, all along, two separate people, a runner and a dog walk woman, moving in opposite directions, who for an instant happened to be passing one another. Then came a store with a sign saying, "Eat in, take out," and in front of it, a lost baseball cap on the sidewalk.
"Was there any place special you wanted to go?" the father asked. "Josie mentioned something about your old store. She said we'd passed it earlier today."
As soon as I heard him say this, I recognized the opportunity it represented and exclaimed perhaps too loudly, "Oh, yes!" Then, controlling myself, I said more quietly, "If you don't mind, I'd very much like that."
She was saying it may not be there anymore, that it might have moved on.
I'm not certain. Even so, if Mr. Paul could take us to the area, it would make me very happy.
Fine. We've time to kill.
At the next intersection, he turned to the right, saying as he did so,
"I wonder how Chrissy's getting on, what they're talking about right now. Maybe she managed to change the topic."
There was now more traffic, and we moved slowly behind other vehicles. The sun was sometimes visible, but he was already getting quite low, and the tall buildings often blocked his view. The sidewalks were busy with office workers at the end of their work, and we passed a man on a ladder, doing something to a shiny red notice that said, "Rotisserie Chicken." The pedestrian crossings and tow-away zone signs went by, and I could sense we were coming nearer to the store.
"Can I ask you something?" the father said.
"Yes, of course."
"I think Josie's still largely in the dark. But I don't know about you. How much you'd guessed before. How much you found out today. Perhaps you wouldn't mind telling me what you do know."
"Before I visited Mr. Capaldi today," I said, "I'd suspected some things, but had been ignorant of many others. Now, after this visit, I can understand Mr. Paul's unease, and I can understand his initial coldness towards me."
"I apologize again for that. So, they explained it all to you, how you fit into the picture?"
"Yes. I believe they told me everything."
"And what do you think? Do you suppose you can pull it off? Perform this role?"
"It won't be easy. But I believe if I continue to observe Josie carefully, it will be within my abilities."
"Then let me ask you something else. Let me ask you this. Do you believe in the human heart? I don't mean simply the organ, obviously. I'm speaking in the poetic sense, the human heart. Do you think there is such a thing? Something that makes each of us special and individual? And if we just suppose that there is, then don't you think, in order to truly learn Josie, you'd have to learn not just her mannerisms, but what's deeply inside her? Wouldn't you have to learn her heart?"
"Yes, certainly."
"And that could be difficult, no? Something beyond even your wonderful capabilities. Because an impersonation wouldn't do, however skillful. You'd have to learn her heart, and learn it fully, or you'll never become Josie in any sense that matters."
A public bus had stopped beside some abandoned fruit boxes. As the father steered around it, the car behind us made angry horn noises. Then there were more angry horns, but these were further away and not aimed at us. "The heart you speak of," I said. "It might indeed be the hardest part of Josie to learn. It might be like a house with many rooms. Even so, a devoted AF, given time, could walk through each of those rooms, studying them carefully in turn, until they became like her own home." The father sounded our own horn at a car trying to enter the traffic line from a side street.
"But then suppose you stepped into one of those rooms," he said, "and discovered another room within it. And inside that room, another room still. Rooms within rooms within rooms. Isn't that how it might be? Trying to learn Josie's heart? No matter how long you wandered through those rooms, wouldn't there always be others you'd not yet entered?"
I considered this for a moment, then said, "Of course, a human heart is bound to be complex. But it must be limited. Even if Mr. Paul is talking in the poetic sense, there'll be an end to what there is to learn. Josie's heart may well resemble a strange house with rooms inside rooms. But if this were the best way to save Josie, then I'd do my utmost. And I believe there's a good chance I'd be able to succeed." For the next few moments, we drove without talking. Then, as we passed a building saying Nail Boutique, and immediately after it, a row of peeling poster walls, he said,
"According to Josie, your old store is in this district."
This might have been so, but the surroundings weren't yet familiar to me. I said to him, "Mr. Paul has spoken very frankly. Perhaps now he'd allow me, in turn, to speak frankly to him."
"Feel free."
"My old store wasn't the true reason I asked you to drive into this district."
"No?"
When we came this way earlier today, not far from the store, we passed a machine. It was being used by overhaul men, and it was creating terrible pollution.
Okay, go on.
It's not easy to explain, but it's very important Mr. Paul now believes what I'm about to say. This machine must be destroyed. That's the real reason I asked to be driven here. It must be somewhere nearby. It's easily identified because it has the name Cootings on its body. It has three funnels and each of them emits terrible pollution.
And you want to find this machine now?
Yes, and to destroy it.
Because it causes pollution.
It's a terrible machine. I was leaning forward, already looking left and right.
And how exactly do you intend to destroy it?
I'm not certain. This is why I wished to be frank with Mr. Paul. I'm requesting his help. Mr. Paul is an expert engineer, as well as an adult.
You're asking me how to vandalize a machine?
But first, we must find it. For instance, please may we turn down the street?
I can't turn there. It's one way. I don't like pollution any more than you do. But isn't this taking things a little far?
I'm unable to explain further, but Mr. Paul must trust me. It's very important for Josie's sake, for her health.
How is this going to help Josie?
I'm sorry. I'm not able to explain. Mr. Paul has to trust me. If we can only find the Cootings machine and destroy it, I believe it will lead to Josie's full recovery. Then it won't matter about Mr. Capaldi or about his portrait or how well I'm able to learn Josie. The father considered this.
All right, he said eventually. Let's at least give this a try. You last saw this thing where, did you say?
We continued to move, and I spotted the RPO building, the fire escapes building beside it, rapidly approaching us. The sun was falling behind them in the familiar way, and then we were passing the store itself. I saw again the colored bottles display and the recessed lighting notice, but I was so concerned I'd missed the Cootings machine, I hardly gave them attention. As we went over the pedestrian crossing, the father said,
I'm wondering if this street's taxis only. Look at them everywhere.
This turning, perhaps. Please, if possible. The Cootings machine hadn't been where I'd seen it earlier, and as the streets grew unfamiliar again, I gazed in every direction. The sun sometimes shone brightly through the gaps between buildings, and I wondered if he was wishing to encourage me, or simply watching and monitoring my progress. When we turned into yet another street, and there was again no sign of the Cootings machine, my growing panic may have become obvious, because the father said, in a kinder voice than any he'd so far used towards me,
You really believe this, don't you? That this will help Josie?
Yes. Yes, I do. Something seemed to change within him. He sat forward, and then, like me, he was looking left and right with urgent eyes.
Hope, he said. Damn thing never leaves you alone.
He shook his head almost resentfully, but there was now a new strength about him.
Okay, a vehicle, you say, one used by construction workers.
It has wheels, but I don't think it's a vehicle as such. It needs to be towed everywhere it goes. It has Cootings written on its body and is pale yellow. He glanced at his watch.
The construction guys may have finished for the day. Let me try a few things.
The father began to drive more skillfully. We left behind the other vehicles, the passers-by, the storefronts, and entered the smaller streets shaded by windowless buildings and large walls bright with cartoon writing. Sometimes the father would stop, reverse, then steer slowly down narrow spaces beside wire mesh fences, on the other side of which we could observe parked trucks and dirty cars.
See anything?
Whenever I shook my head, he'd make the car lurch forward again, in a way that made me anxious we'd strike a fire hydrant or the corner of a building as we turned sharply around it. We looked into more yards, and once we entered between two crookedly opened gates, even though there was a sign hanging from one saying, "Strictly no admittance," and drove around a yard filled with vehicles, stacked crates, and a construction crane at the far end. But there was still no Cootings machine. And the father then took us into a shadow neighborhood with broken sidewalks and lonely passers-by. He steered into another narrow lane beside a looming floors-for-lease building, and behind this building was yet another yard bound by wire mesh fencing.
"There! Mr. Paul, there it is!"
The father jerk-stopped the car. The yard was on my side, so I placed my head right against the window, and behind me, the father was adjusting in his seat to see better.
"That one there, with the funnels?"
"Yes, we've found it."
I didn't take my gaze from the Cootings machine while the father reversed the car slowly. Then we stopped once more.
"That main entrance has a chain on it," he said. "But the side entrance there..."
"Yes, the small entrance is open. A passerby could enter on foot."
I released the safety belt and was about to get out, but then felt the father's hand on my arm.
"I wouldn't go in there until you've decided exactly what you intend to do. It all looks ramshackle, but you never know. There may be alarms, there may be surveillance. You may not have time to stand around and think."
"Yes, you're right."
"Are you quite certain you have the correct machine?"
"Quite certain. I can see it clearly from here, and there's no doubt."
"And disabling it, you say, will help Josie?"
"Yes."
"So how do you propose to go about doing that?"
I stared at the Cootings machine, sitting near the center of the yard, separated from the other parked vehicles. The sun was falling between two silhouette buildings in the mid-distance, overlooking the yard. His rays weren't for the moment blocked by either building, and the edges of the parked vehicles were shining.
"I feel very foolish," I said finally.
"No, it's not so easy," the father said. "On top of which, what you're proposing would count as criminal damage."
"Yes. However, if the people up in those high windows over there happen to see anything, I'm sure they'd be happy to see the Cootings machine being destroyed. They'd know just what an awful machine it is."
"That may be so. But how do you propose to do it?"
The father was now leaning back in his seat, one arm quite relaxed on the wheel, and I had the impression he'd already arrived at a possible solution, but for some reason was holding back from revealing it.
"Mr. Paul is an expert engineer," I said, turning to face him directly. I was hoping he'd be able to think of something.
But the father kept gazing through the windshield at the yard.
"I couldn't explain it to Josie earlier in the cafe," he said. "I couldn't explain to her why I hate Capaldi so much, why I can't bring myself to be civil towards him. But I'd like to try and explain it to you, Clara, if you don't mind."
His switch of subject was highly unwelcome, but anxious not to lose his goodwill, I said nothing and waited.
"I think I hate Capaldi because, deep down, I suspect he may be right, that what he claims is true. That science has now proved beyond doubt there's nothing so unique about my daughter. Nothing there our modern tools can't excavate, copy, transfer. That people have been living with one another all this time, centuries, loving and hating each other, and all on a mistaken premise. A kind of superstition we kept going while we didn't know better. That's how Capaldi sees it. And there's a part of me that fears he's right. Chrissy, on the other hand, isn't like me. She may not know it yet, but she'll never let herself be persuaded. If the moment ever comes, never mind how well you play your part, Clara, never mind how much she wishes it to work, Chrissy just won't be able to accept it. She's too old-fashioned. Even if she knows she's going against the science and the math, she still won't be able to do it. She just won't stretch that far. but I'm different. I have a kind of coldness inside me she lacks. Perhaps it's because I'm an expert engineer, as you put it. This is why I find it so hard to be civil around people like Capaldi. When they do what they do, say what they say, it feels like they're taking from me what I hold most precious in this life. Am I making sense?
Yes. I understand Mr. Paul's feelings. I let a quiet few seconds go by, then continued. It seems then, from everything Mr. Paul says, that it's even more important that what Mr. Capaldi proposes is never put to the test. If we can make Josie healthy, then the portrait, my learning her, none of it will matter. So I ask you again, please advise me how I might destroy the Cootings machine. I have a feeling Mr. Paul has an idea how we might do it.
Yes, a possibility has occurred to me, but I was hoping a better idea might come along. Unfortunately, it's looking like that isn't going to happen.
Please tell me. Something may change at any moment, and this opportunity will pass.
Okay. Well, here it is. That machine will contain inside it a Sylvester Broad Generation Unit, middle market, fuel efficient and robust enough, but with no real protections. It means that machine can stand any amount of dust, smoke, rain. But if anything, let's say, with a high acrylamide content got inside its system, for example, a PEG-9 solution, it wouldn't be able to handle it. It would be like putting gasoline into a diesel engine, except a lot worse. If you introduced PEG-9 in there, it would rapidly polymerize. The damage is likely to be terminal.
PEG-9 solution.
Yes.
Does Mr. Paul know how we might obtain PEG-9 solution at short notice?
As it happens, I do.
He went on looking at me for a second, then said,
"You'll be carrying a certain quantity of PEG-9, there, inside your head."
I see.
I believe there's usually a small cavity, just there, at the back of the head, where it meets the neck. This isn't my area of expertise. Capaldi would know much more. But my guess is that you could afford to lose a small amount of PEG-9 without it significantly affecting your well-being.
If we were able to extract the solution from me, would there be sufficient to destroy the Cootings machine?
This really isn't my area. But my guess is that you might be carrying approximately 500 milliliters. Even half of that should be sufficient to incapacitate a middle market machine such as that one. Having said that, I have to emphasize, I'm not advocating we go down this road. Anything that jeopardizes your abilities would jeopardize Capaldi's plan, and Chrissy wouldn't want that.
My mind was filling with great fear, but I said, "But Mr. Paul believes if we could extract the solution, we could destroy the Cootings machine."
That's what I believe, yes.
Is it possible Mr. Paul has suggested this course not only to destroy the Cootings machine, but also to damage Clara, and thus Mr. Capaldi's plan?
That very thought did cross my mind, too. But if I really wanted to damage you, Clara, I think there are far simpler ways. Truth is, you've started me hoping again. Hoping what you say might be for real.
How would we extract the solution?
Just a small incision, below the ear. Either ear would do. We'd require a tool, something with a sharp point or edge. We need only to pierce the outer layer. Beyond that, well, there should be a small valve I can loosen, then tighten back again with my fingers.
He'd been searching through the mother's car's glove compartment while saying this, and he now produced a plastic bottle of water.
Okay, this will do to catch the solution. And here, it's not ideal, but here's a tiny screwdriver. If I sharpened the edge a little more...
He trailed off, holding the tool up to the light.
After that, It's just a case of walking over there and carefully pouring the solution down one of those nozzles. We should use the central one. It's likely to connect directly to the Sylvester unit.
Will I lose my abilities?
As I said, your overall performance shouldn't be greatly impaired, but this isn't my area. There may be some effects on your cognitive abilities. But since your essential energy source is solar, you shouldn't be affected to any significant degree.
He lowered the window on his side, and holding out the plastic bottle, emptied the water out onto the ground outside.
This is your call, Clara. If you want, we can just drive away from here. We have another, 20 minutes before our rendezvous with the rest of our party.
I stared at the yard again, through the wire mesh fencing, trying to control my fear. My view of it from the car had remained unpartitioned, and the sun was still watching from between the two silhouette buildings.
You know, Clara, I don't even know what this is about. But I want what's best for Josie, exactly the same as you. So I'm willing to grasp at any chance that comes our way.
I turned to him with a smile and nodded. Yes, I said. Then let's try. Sitting beside the sushi cafe's window, looking out at the shadows growing longer outside the theater, I'd become excited by the possibility that the sun might conceivably pour in his special nourishment straight away through this very window to Josie, now sitting across the table from me. But I realized how tired the sun must be, that he'd all but finished for the day, and that it was both disrespectful and unreasonable to expect such an immediate response. A small hope continued to linger in my mind, and I watched Josie closely, but I soon accepted I'd have to wait until the following morning at the very earliest. I'd also realized the reason I couldn't see so clearly through the sushi cafe's window was because it was dusty and smeared, and not so much to do with what had occurred in the yard. Indeed, despite its constant billowing in the breeze, I could still read the large cloth banner above the theater entrance saying, "Blissfully Brilliant," and I had no difficulty deciphering the people arriving to join those already milling around outside the theater. Each time more people came, there would be greetings and humorous shouts. I couldn't hear their words clearly, but there was thick glass separating us, so this too was consistent with the prevailing conditions. Our task in the yard hadn't delayed us unduly, but by the time the father and I had finally located the correct sushi cafe, Josie, Rick, the mother, and Miss Helen had already been sitting for several minutes around the table beside the window. The father had greeted everyone cheerfully, as though there hadn't been any tension at Mr. Capaldi's. But soon afterwards, the mother had risen and gone out to join the crowd outside, her oblong held to her ear. Now, across the table, the father was turning the pages of Rick's notebook and making appreciative sounds. But I was concerned at how uncharacteristically quiet Josie had become. And soon, the father noticed this too.
You okay there, animal?
I'm fine, Dad.
We've been on the go for a long time now. Do you want to go back to the apartment?
I'm not tired. I'm not sick. I'm okay, Dad. Let me just sit here. Rick, sitting beside Josie, was also looking at her with concern. Hey, Josie, do you fancy finishing this for me? He said this quietly, almost into her ear, as he slid the remainder of his carrot cake towards her.
It might give you energy.
I don't need energy, Ricky. I'm fine. I just want to sit here, that's all. The father looked carefully at Josie, then turned back to Rick's notebook.
These are really interesting, Rick.
Ricky, darling, Miss Helen said. It just occurs to me. It was an excellent idea to bring your diagrams along. But perhaps it's best you don't offer them to Vance unless he specifically asks you.
Mom, we've been over this.
It's just that it might look inappropriate. Too eager.
This is supposed to be just a social meeting after all. A spontaneous encounter.
Mom, how can this be spontaneous when it's been so carefully set up and we've come in specially for it?
I just mean, darling, you must try and behave as though it's spontaneous. That's what will work best with Vance. Only if he asks specifically to see some of your work.
I understand, Mom. It's all under control.
Rick looked tense, and I wished to do something to give him reassurance. But I was across the table from him and couldn't reach over to touch his arm or shoulder. The father was again looking at Josie, but she didn't seem to me unwell so much as simply lost in her own thoughts.
Drones were never my area, the father said after a while. But this, Rick, is truly impressive and exciting.
Then to Miss Helen,
lifted or not, genuine ability has to get noticed, unless this world's completely crazy now.
You were always encouraging me, Mr. Arthur,
Rick said, right from when I first started getting into all this. So much of what you showed me back then forms the foundations of what you see there.
That's kind, Rick, but I'm sure it's entirely unwarranted. Drone technology was never my area, and I doubt if I was ever of much help to you, but I appreciate you saying that.
Through the window, I could now see the sun's last patterns of the day falling across the black suit women with bow ties, the theater's waistcoat officials handing out leaflets, the bright costume couples, and the musicians with small guitars moving amidst the crowd, snatches of their music coming through the glass.
Hey, animal, did your mother happen to say something to upset you? This isn't like you, sitting there so quiet.
I'm fine, Dad. I'm just not like a show, okay? I can't sparkle and entertain all day. Sometimes I just want to sit and chill out.
You know, we do miss you, Paul, Miss Helen said.
Is it 4 years already? Oh, look, even more people arriving. I wonder when they'll let them go inside.
It's just as well there's no traffic allowed through here.
Where's Chrissy now? Is she still out there?
I see her, Mom. She's still on her phone.
I'm so glad she's with us today. So reassuring. She's such a good friend to me. And I do appreciate all of you, too. Being here like this, extending your support to Rick and to me.
She looked around the table, appearing to make a special point of including me in her gaze. I won't pretend I'm not getting nervous, the hour being almost upon us. And not just on Rick's account, if I'm honest. Did I ever tell you, Paul, the man we're about to meet, he and I were once passionate, not just for a weekend or a few months, but for years.
Mom, please.
Should you get a chance to talk with him, Paul, I think you'll find you have certain things in common. For instance, he too has fascistic leanings. He always has done, though I always tried not to notice.
Mom, for God's sake!
Now, Helen, easy there, the father said. Are you implying that I...
It's only because of what you were saying a moment ago, Paul, about your community.
No, Helen, I can't have this, and in front of the kids, too. What I was saying earlier has nothing to do with fascism. We have no aggressive agenda beyond defending ourselves, should the need arise. Where you live, Helen, maybe you don't have to worry yet, and I sincerely hope it'll be that way for a long time. Where I am, it's different.
Then why, Dad, don't you move out of there? Why keep living in a place with gangs and guns?
The father seemed pleased Josie had finally participated.
Because that's my community, Josie. It's not nearly as bad as this makes it sound. I like it there. I'm sharing my life with some very fine people, and most of them came down the same road I did. It's become clear to all of us now, there are many different ways to lead a decent and full life.
Are you saying, Dad, you're glad you lost your job?
In many ways, Josie, yes.
And it's not like I really lost my job. It's all been part of the changes. Everyone's had to find new ways to live their lives.
I do apologize, Paul, Miss Helen said, for suggesting you and your new friends were fascists. I shouldn't have done so. It's just that you did say you were all white people and all from the ranks of the former professional elites. You did say that, and that you were having to arm yourselves quite extensively against other types. Which does all sound a little on the fascistic side.
Helen, I won't have this. Josie knows it's not that way. But I don't like her even hearing you say it. I don't like Rick hearing it either. It just isn't true. There are different groups where we live, I'm not denying it. I didn't make the rules, and it's just the way it naturally divided. And if another group won't respect us and what we have, they need to know they'll have a fight on their hands. Mom's way out of order, Rick said. She's getting anxious, that's all. You'll have to excuse her. Don't worry, Rick. I've known your mother a long time, and I'm very fond of her.
His name is Vance, Miss Helen said, the man we're waiting to meet. Rick and I are so grateful you're all here to lend moral support. But from here, we're on our own. Let me tell you, Paul, there was a time when Vance was quite besotted with me. Rick, darling, please don't pull that face. Rick's never met him. This was all before his time. Oh, there was that one occasion, I suppose, but that hardly counts. When you see him, Paul, I dare say you'll wonder what on earth I saw in him. But I assure you, he was once even more handsome than you are. Oddly, the more success he had in life, the less handsome he became. Now he's rich and influential and looks appalling. Still, I'll try and see the handsome young man he once was within all those folds of flesh. I do wonder if he'll do as much for me.
What's happening out there, animal? Can you see your mother?
She's still on her phone.
I guess she's mad at me. She probably won't come back in so long as I'm sitting here.
Perhaps the father was hoping someone would contradict him, but no one did. Miss Helen even raised her eyebrows and made a short laughing sound. Then she said,
"Nearly time, Rick, darling. I suppose we ought to go out there now."
When I heard her say this, a fear filled my mind. I was no longer certain that the effects from what had occurred in the yard weren't growing more pronounced with the passing minutes, and that my new condition wouldn't become obvious to everyone if I attempted to negotiate the unfamiliar terrain outdoors.
"I do wonder," Miss Helen was saying, "when Vance suggested meeting outside a theater, if he realized there might be a show about to start and a crowd gathering. We should go out there. He might come early and the crowd will confuse him."
Rick placed a hand on Josie's shoulder and asked quietly,
"Are you sure you're okay, Josie?"
"I swear I'm okay. So you go and do your best, Ricky boy. That's what I'm wanting more than anything."
"That's right," the father said. "And just remember, you've got talent. Well, maybe we should all leave now."
He rose to his feet, and as he did so, his gaze fell on me, examining me more carefully than would have been normal. I immediately became worried the others would notice, even though the incision was well hidden under my hair. Then the father's gaze moved once more to Josie.
"Animal, we need to get you back. Let's go and find your mother."
As we came out of the sushi cafe, the sun was making his final patterns for the day, and I let go of any small hope that he might send his special help in the short time remaining. I could now hear without hindrance the theater people's voices and music, and noticed how the streetlight outside the theater entrance was becoming their main light source. Indeed, for a moment, I thought the theater people were trying to circle around the streetlight in a previously agreed formation, but then their pattern dissolved, and I saw that the crowd's shape was shifting randomly. The father and Miss Helen were a few paces in front of me, striding towards the crowd, while Rick and Josie were just behind, walking so close that had I been obliged to halt suddenly, they would have collided with me. I could hear Josie saying, "No, Rick, later. I'll tell you about it then. Let's just say for now Mom's having one of her definitely weird days."
"But what did she say? What's going on?"
"Look, Ricky, it's not what's important right now. What's important is this guy you're about to meet and what you're going to say to him."
"But I can see you're upset."
"I'm not upset, Ricky, but I will get upset, absolutely upset, if you don't focus and do your very best with this guy. This is important. Important for you and important for us."
I thought that once I was no longer observing them through glass, the theater people would become more distinct. But now I was in their midst, their figures became more simplified, as if constructed out of cones and cylinders made from smooth card. Their clothes, for instance, were devoid of the usual creases and folds, and even their faces under the streetlight appear to have been created by cleverly placing flat surfaces into complex arrangements to create a sense of contouring. We kept walking until the noise was all around us. At one point, I stopped and reached back for Josie's arm, but she was no longer behind me. And even though I could hear her voice saying to Rick, "There's Mom over there," when I turned to it, I saw neither Josie nor Rick, but a smooth forehead coming towards my own face. Someone pushed my back, though not unkindly. Then I heard the father's voice. And turning again, I saw him and Miss Helen standing beside a stranger's elbow. I could hear the father saying,
"I didn't want to say this back there in front of the kids, but Helen, look. It's all very well calling me a fascist. Call me what you want. But where you're living now, it may not always remain so peaceful. You hear what happened in this very city last week? I'm not saying you're in danger right now, but you need to think ahead. When I speak to Chrissy about this, she just shrugs. But you need to think about this. Think ahead about Rick as much as about yourself."
"Oh, but I am thinking ahead, Paul. Why do you suppose we're here today? Why do you suppose I'm looking left and right for my long-lost lover? I'm thinking ahead and I'm planning. And if I've done so correctly, Rick will soon be elsewhere. And not, I hope, in any community barricading itself with weapons. I mean for Rick to do well. And for that I need Vance's help. Oh, where can he have got to? Perhaps he went to the wrong theater."
"Rick's turned into a fine young man. I hope he's able to find a path through this mess we've bequeathed to his generation. But if things don't go so well, Helen, either for you or for him, then I want you to get in touch. I can find you both a place within our community."
"That's very sweet of you, Paul, and I'm sorry if I was rude earlier. This might surprise you, but I'm not actually angry about the way we've become. If one child has more ability than another, then it's only right the brighter one gets the opportunities. The responsibilities, too. I accept that. But what I won't accept is that Rick can't have a decent life. I refuse to accept this world has become so cruel. Rick wasn't lifted, but he can still go far, do very well."
"I wish him the very best. All I'm saying is that there are all kinds of ways to lead a successful life."
Many faces had been pushing in around me, but now a new one appeared in front of the others and kept moving closer till it was almost touching mine. Only then did I recognize Rick and let out a sound of surprise.
"Clara, do you know what's up with Josie?" he asked. "Did something happen earlier?"
"I don't know what was said between Josie and the mother," I said. "But I have very good news. The task that was given to me, that evening you helped me reach Mr. McBain's barn, it's now been completed. It was a task I so wished to complete, but for a long time I couldn't see how to do so. Rick, it's really been done."
"That's wonderful, but I'm not sure I know what you're talking about."
"I can't explain yet, and I was obliged to give up something. But that doesn't matter at all, because now we can have hope again. Ever more cones and cylinders, or what appeared to be fragments of them, were squeezing into any spaces left around me. I then realized one of these fragments, a shape moving in to replace Rick, was in fact Josie. Once I'd recognized her, she became immediately more distinct, and I had no further difficulty holding her in my mind.
"Hey, Clara, this here's Cindy. She was waitressing our table earlier. She knows about your old store."
There was a touch on my arm, and I heard someone exclaim,
"Hey, I used to love your store."
When I turned towards the voice, I saw two tall funnels, one inserted into the other, the upper one tilting slightly forward towards me. When I smiled and said, "How do you do?" the funnels went on.
"I was telling your owner here, I walked past it last weekend, and it's become this furniture place. Hey, you know, I'm sure I saw you in that window once."
Clara wants to know where they've moved to. Cindy, do you know?
"Oh, I'm not sure if they've moved."
Someone was tugging my arm, but before me now were so many fragments they appeared like a solid wall. I'd also started to suspect that many of these shapes weren't really even three-dimensional, but had been sketched onto flat surfaces using clever shading techniques to give the illusion of roundness and depth. I then realized that the figure now beside me, leading me away, was the mother. She was saying, almost into my ear,
"Clara, I know we said a lot of things earlier. In the car, I mean. But you have to understand. I was thinking about 3, 4 things at once. All I'm saying is, don't take too seriously anything we said. You understand, right?"
"You mean, when we were in the car alone? When we were parked near the bridge?"
"Yes, that's what I mean. I'm not saying we're going back on anything, but I'm just saying so you know, okay? Oh, this whole thing's getting so confusing. And Paul doesn't help. Look at him. What's he telling her now?"
Not far from us, the father was leaning forward so that his face was close to Josie's, saying something earnestly.
"He's so full of shit these days," the mother said, and began to go to them.
But before she could do so, an arm came out of the crowd and grasped her wrist.
"Chrissy," Miss Helen's voice said, "leave them alone for another minute. They don't get to be together much these days."
"Paul's distributed his brand of wisdom quite enough for one day, it seems to me," the mother said. "And now look, they're quarreling."
"They're not quarreling, Chrissy. I assure you they're not. So let them talk to each other."
"Helen, I really don't need you to interpret for me. I can still read my own daughter and husband."
"Ex-husband, Chrissy. And exes are unfathomable, as I'm having underlined this very moment. Vance swore he'd not keep us waiting, and now look. We weren't married, as you and Paul were, so the bitter aftertaste has a different flavor. But don't..."